This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome. This is an episode of Vintage Homeschool Moms. This is episode 190, and we are going to talk about evaluating your kids, the end of the year evaluations. Okay, don't start freaking out on me. I know it can be a very stressful time, but I'm going to share with you some information that I think is going to make it a lot easier for you to navigate. I want to thank our sponsors. Today we have two, Lori Power with Second Harvest Curriculum. You can find out more information about Lori at usedhomeschoolbooks.com, as well as the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network and Vintage Homeschool Moms show sponsor. And we want to thank Sony Pictures featuring the movie Smurfs The Lost Village. You can find out more information at smurfsmovie.com. And be sure to check out the Christian study guide for this movie on our show notes page, and more about the movie at affirmsfilms.com. Again, all those links will be on our show notes at vintagehomeschoolmoms.com, podcast 190, end of the year evaluations. So we are looking at evaluations, right, and thinking, what am I going to do? Each year there's a flurry of end-of-year activities, and that includes evaluations or tests. And I don't want you to stress this, because in this podcast I'm going to tell you about what we're going to talk about. And the first thing is the information that will help you look into your testing options. Two, ways to alleviate parental stress. Three, safeguards that will ensure that your kids are on track to make progress and making the review process easier and more fun. So how are we going to do all that in a short amount of time? Well, I'm going to motor through some of this. And by the way, as you're listening, if you're listening on the website, that is awesome. You can listen at vintagehomeschoolmoms.com, scroll down to your favorite podcast and listen right there. Or you can listen on any smartphone, whether it is an iPhone or an Android. You can listen on Google Play if you have a Google phone. Whatever platform you are on, we are there. And be sure to give us a star rating. I want to thank all of you ahead of time for doing that on iTunes. And I went over the other day and started looking at them and chuckling at some of the comments you made. It was really, really sweet. So thank you so much. So what are we going to do? Well, the first thing you're going to do is very easy. It depends on the state in which you live, because the rules are different when it comes to yearly evaluations. By law in Florida, we're allowed to have a private certified teacher evaluate our students, or take a standardized test that's administered via proxy, whether it's a homeschool group or it could actually be in a school. They have offered to do testing at our school board. I highly, I don't know how to say this nicely, I guess my, don't do it. I highly don't recommend it, just because your child is more than likely not going to be used to that situation. If you have a child who was in a public or private school and is used to that format, maybe they will be more comfortable in that situation if they do well. And if not, I'm going to give you some of the other options. I'm one of those people who shunned standardized tests until it was time for my kids to take the college entrance exams and the test to get into college for those that went to college. So if you have a kid who is going to be going to college and taking the SAT or ACT tests, I want to tell you how my strategy actually worked well, because my kids performed well on those tests. Because we studied strategies instead of just the information contained. I host a bi-monthly show with Jean Burke of College Prep Genius. She is amazing in her handling of teaching kids to ace the ACT and the SAT. You can listen to her show at collegeprepgenius.com/podcast, right on our own Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. She also goes into what standardized tests are and are not, and we actually did a podcast on the topic of standardized tests, and I think that will really help you a lot when you're preparing if that's the option you want to use. So now it's time to make a decision on how your child is to be evaluated, and I'm going to have some links on the site where you can find out exactly what your state requires. I'm going to send you to a page that will help you with that. So first thing is, how are you signed up to homeschool? Have you signed up to homeschool under the county in which you live or under an umbrella school? An umbrella school acts like a private school, and you basically answer to them like your child would if they attended a private or public school. And you will look at their requirements, which will be in conjunction with your state requirements, as well as something that they might add. For example, I'll discuss this later with our portfolios. One of the things that we had to add was attendance. So we basically took out a calendar and we did not track attendance every day. Because, and it's not being dishonest for those of you who want to you know, talk about honesty and that kind of thing. If you look at how many hours you homeschool, I guarantee you, you homeschool more hours than you really could chart, because whether the kids are doing an art project or they're building something or they're reading on their own or they're discovering or they're studying, we school 24/7. And so the way I look at it as we overly school, and if we counted all our hours, it would look ridiculous. So you can basically say a kindergartner to a first grader, I believe that that's the 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day for elementary, and 5 hours a day for high school. Now, don't quote me on that. Do check with your county or state. But we definitely homeschooled way more than that. So when we needed to take, you know, keep track of our hours, it was just really easy to take a calendar grid and add all our hours. You can have your kids track their hours on their checkoff list if you give them one. I highly recommend that, especially with the older kids. And the younger kids like it too, because they can see what they've done and they don't have to ask you how much more school they have to go. They can just look at their checkoff list. Little kids can do it too. My checkoff list used to just have pictures on it, and so the kids could check it off or circle it when they had completed that task. In fact, as I'm thinking about it, I should probably find it on my computer because it was really cute and give it to you guys as a handout. Okay, so what is your testing policy in your state? You're going to look at that. And what are your options as to the type of tests? Again, look at the show notes on podcast 190 for information on how to find out more about that option. I have links on the podcast notes where you're going to find a ton of information about where to find out your state laws, as well as even ordering things like practice tests. Well, let's go over some of the most popular standardized tests. So what is a standardized test? It is a multiple choice, or as my kids say, multiple guess type of test, and you bubble in the right answers. They're developed by commercial companies that are supposed to be testing the child's academic abilities. But really and truly, and take it from one who studied standardized testing in college, basically what it is doing is comparing your child to all the other children across the country in their grade level that have taken this test. So it really depends on how your child feels that day, how many questions did they guess on, and how all the other kids did on that given test in the country. So is it really an accurate assessment of how your child did? No, not really. And especially if you study test taking and all of the, you know, different strategies in taking a test, your child will do really well. So some of the tests include the Iowa test, the California Achievement Test, or known as the CAT, and the Stanford test, which typically is considered an IQ test. And there are various ones. Gene Burke, again, did a podcast on standardized tests that I encourage you to listen to. And one of the things she talks about is knowing what they're looking for, basically understanding math vocabulary and so forth, because that will really help you pick out the right answer. So if you're going to do an evaluation or a test, there are different things you can do. The first is standardized tests, and the second part are evaluations. So with standardized tests, first of all, you need to know your deadlines, where you need to take the test if you're taking the kids to get proxied, or if you're going to purchase the test and give them at home. Some states will not allow you to do that just because they think, you know, the parent's going to do it. I don't know. But others may allow you to. So again, look at that. So you need to know when you need to order the test and take the test. You need to realize that you do need to prepare your kids and basically to sit down and bubble in stuff. One of my children was telling me recently that they took a college class test and they realized at the end that they had bubbled in the wrong section. They started in the wrong place. So just teach your kids that really simple thing, because even when they're older, they can figure that out, and mess up. So my son was able to tell the professor and he could stay and fix his answers. With standardized tests, you can't, because when time's up, it's up and you've got to put your pencil down. If your kids are taking a test at home, I don't need to tell you that, you know, it's kind of the honor system. You don't want to get the test in and start teaching to the test, or figuring out ways that you can expand the time and things like that. Because for it to be standardized, everyone needs to adhere to, you know, they haven't looked at the test before. It is on a time schedule. And when you say put down your pencil, they need to put down the pencil. And also, you have to read a script, because everybody is hearing it the same way and you cannot answer any questions during that. So basically, don't cheat, don't teach the test, and don't worry about it. You can take the test over if your child is sick or you just feel like, you know, they did horribly on it. You can actually take the test somewhere else or have it proctored in your home by someone who is credentialed. What do the scores mean? Well, you're going to get a percentile ranking, you're going to get a stay nine, and a grade equivalent. So what does that mean? Let's look at each one of these things, and I want to discuss it with you, because part of the problem is we don't, you know, we go through the test taking part of it, and then we get the scores and we're like, okay, what does all this mean? So the percentile ranking is going to just tell you how your child did compared to others. So for example, if it's a 50th percentile, that means that your child scored better than 50% out of 100 students in the group that took the same test. It does not mean that your child only got a 50 on the test. Same thing if it's 75 or 85 percentile. It's not percent, it's the percentage out of 100 of the group that was used, the norming group, okay, the average of all the kids that took the test, and it's compared to that average. Stay nine is another one of those words that may be unfamiliar, and this tells you where your child's score fell on the bell curve. So that bell curve is starts low. It's like a mountain, okay, like a rounded mountain is the bell curve. And where is it? And it's broken up into nine parts. So just imagine that the 99 percentile is divided into nine sections. So the first to third stainines would be below average, the fourth to sixth would be average, and the seventh to ninth would be above average. Again, not something to freak out about, especially if it's the first time your child has ever taken a standardized test. And the last is the grade equivalent. Now, this is something that we do get. We're like, okay, you know, I have a fourth grader or a fifth grader. So it's going to give you the grade and a decimal point, which is going to tell you what month. So it could be a child is in the fourth grade, second month, or eighth grade, ninth month. It doesn't mean that your child is on a seventh grade or eighth grade or ninth grade level. It just tells you how your child scored on that test. Unless they are, you know, in that grade level, then it means that your child more than likely tested in their right grade level. So it doesn't really, it does tell you, like, for example, if your fourth grader scored 2.5, so they're working on a second grade, fifth month level, they may be struggling, you know. So they may need some extra help. But if your, you know, 10th grader scored like in the 11.5 month, so they scored 11th grade, 5th month, and they're doing pretty good. So remember to just keep all of this in perspective. If your child didn't do as well as you wanted them to do, one of the things I would do is regroup. Look at what you could change for next year. And like I said, you know, don't sweat it, because what the testing is doing, again, in a nutshell, is that it is looking at, did the child make progress? And if your child did make progress and you want to get a second opinion, like an evaluation, which I'm going to talk about when we come right back, don't worry about it. It really improve that test score. And, you know, in keeping the results in perspective, one of my children tested 2 years below grade level, which I already knew. And the next time she took the test, she graded post high school into her freshman year of college as a 10th grader. We did remediation when I learned that she really needed some extra help. Typical to what is provided by one of our podcasters, Dr. Jan Bedell, thebraincoachtips.com, and at her website, littlegiantsteps.com. So if you have a struggling learner, you may want to check out Jan's programs. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about evaluations, portfolios, and so much more. We'll be right back.
Well, today I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Second Harvest Curriculum, and you can find them at usedhomeschoolbooks.com. Second Harvest is a curriculum company owned and operated by Lori Power, and Lori's a homeschool mom, actually a graduated homeschool mom. Her homeschool journey is over, but she is providing this amazing resource. So Second Harvest is a source for quality used homeschool books with over 40 publishers to choose from. So you can visit their website and see if the books that you are looking for are available. And one of the things I love about Second Harvest is that it comes with a 30-day return policy, and I think that's really important. You know, at Second Harvest, they also buy back gently used books. So if you have some books that are sitting around that want a good home, with either a homeschool family or Christian schools, you can find out if this is something that Lori wants to carry on Vintage Homeschool Moms. You will find information there with all of their social media links. And you can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. If you have any questions, visit them at usedhomeschoolbooks.com or talk to Lori on the phone at 308-350-0335. And I want to thank Second Harvest for being a sponsor of Vintage Homeschool Moms. We really appreciate that.
Now, the Blue Crew is back.
Let's go have some fun.
In their first fully animated adventure.
Nailed it.
To escape a dangerous, undiscovered world, the Smurfs will have to team up with a whole new tribe.
A village full of girls.
Hey.
Get out, you guys!
Smurfs, The Lost Village, rated PG, exclusively from Affirm Films. Get a free Bible-based discussion guide. Visit AffirmFilms.com to download it for free and enjoy great discussions with your whole family about the importance of purpose, friendship, honesty, and loyalty, as seen in Smurfs, The Lost Village, now playing.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. This is Felice Gerwitz with Vintage Homeschool Moms. Today, we're talking about evaluations. This is podcast 190. You can find the show notes at VintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Look for podcast 190, end of the year evaluations. And remember to share this podcast with a friend. You can hit forward or share. We got lots of share buttons on our network. Really appreciate that, guys. All right, evaluations. Should you do evaluations? I'm going to tell you what I do. You do what you need to do. Go to prayer, ask the Lord. But for us, evaluations were a godsend. I did not overly test my kids when they were younger. I know some of you like the standardized tests, and that's great. But for us, I had some kids with special needs, and I had a child that's gifted and kids who fell everywhere in between. So the evaluations were going to help me really pinpoint where I needed to work with them more by talking to a professional teacher. Although I am a professional teacher, I am very biased when it comes to my kids, not in a good way. You know how some of us think our kids are perfect? Well, my poor kids get the other end of the spectrum where I always think they can do better. So having an evaluation with a teacher who's certified, who has current certification as an educator in your state, and having them look through your child's work progress, typically a portfolio evaluation, and I'll discuss portfolios in just a few minutes, and they'll look to see if your child has made progress in that year. And progress is really a interesting word, because if your child is struggling and they made progress that year, that may be the best that your child can do, and that's okay. And that's why evaluations are awesome, especially if you have a struggling learner. And then the second part of the evaluations is, who's going to do the evaluation? What would you ask the evaluator? You know, first of all, ask your friends. Not necessarily someone you know, although our evaluator has become a really good friend of ours. I had someone who was awesome with my first two, and she handled it a lot differently than the one who evaluates my kids now does. She actually gave the kids a little bit of an on-the-spot test, and they either did well or didn't. And she would talk to me about it, and then she would sign a blanket statement that said, I so-and-so, here is my teaching certificate in the state of Florida, has reviewed the child, you know, blank with their name, with their birth date and their grade on this day, and I have certified that they have made progress, period. It didn't go into any big, huge, long report or anything like that. Again, make sure that your state allows that, and I would give the state the very minimum information that they need. The second, after you've figured out some people that you could possibly ask, you know, think about church, you know, maybe your spouse's work situation and that kind of thing, ask them for references. And I'm not talking about credentials and things like that. While that is important, I would ask them, what other homeschoolers have you evaluated? Can I have some names of people I can call? Or you know, what will you be looking for? Will I get my evaluation on the spot? If they say no, I would not use them. When they leave, I want that evaluation signed and in my hand. How much do you charge? How long will the evaluation take? It should not take more than an hour per child. And also, if you have a child who's struggling, you will let them know ask them how they would treat that situation, and so forth. So remember that whether or not you can do an evaluation depends on your state in which you are in, and so you want to look at that. So that's basically it. I don't want anything super specific going to the school board, which is why people sometimes like to have standardized tests. Even if your child is taking a standardized test, one thing I forgot to say to you, make sure that you are getting the test results first, that they're not automatically sent on to the school board. You want to be able to get them yourself in your hands before you give them out, because then you can decide, okay, we need to do some extra work here. We're not freaking out, and I'm going to have an evaluation done. Just make sure that you have enough time to get that information in. That's all I really want to say about that. I want to move on to portfolios. So what is a portfolio? For me, it's simply a three-ring binder, a big three-ring binder of work progression. What's in it? It's a collection of beginning, middle, and end of the year papers. I've had videos in there with CDs because we would keep it from year to year. Picture albums, collections of math or writing papers, any tests or samples of work, list of field trips, books you've read as a family and the child individually, any curriculum you've used, the name and publisher with the coursework samples. And I used to tear out, not on a hard textbook, but on a disposable textbook that you could, or a workbook or whatever. I would take the beginning chapters and I would stick that in a slip sheet so that I had a copy in my portfolio of what the children studied that year. And then I took out some work samples, beginning, middle, and end. I didn't go overboard with 100 sheets of paper for math because you're going to have a binder that's, 300 inches thick. Okay. Yes, I am exaggerating. But you want to just take out like two or three pages of each beginning, middle, and end. Again, depending on what's required in your state. Your child may be required to be in attendance, and I'm going to tell you, most kids love to be evaluated. Whenever we would do our evaluations, my grandkids would come over here as well. And it was hard to get those little ones to stop talking, and it was really cute that the next child to be evaluated would go see how much longer it was going to take and kind of get that first session over. Because if you have someone who's really good, they're going to engage the children. We did once have someone, not for me, but for someone I know, that was another homeschool parent. And the questioning went something like this during the evaluation, after the child was done. She asked this evaluator, she goes, "Well, can you help give me some good ideas for fourth grade reading to get my child really reading well?" And the lady said, "Oh, no, I only taught up to second grade, so I don't really know anything about fourth graders." And this mother left with the thought, well, then why did you just evaluate my fourth grader if you don't know the information? Now, obviously, I think she was shortchanging herself. She did the evaluation fine, but you want to ask questions of the person that you're evaluating ahead of time just so that situation doesn't happen. It served the purpose for that year, but if you want some feedback, which I always do, I want my evaluator to give me some ideas of how we can move forward with my children. And also, especially now that my son's finishing up high school, it's my last one, we want to be able to look at some of his dual enrollment credits for college, as well as what he's done in the home, mesh those two together, which we did his first year of high school. So now that he's in his third year of high school, we know what our senior year is going to look like, and not do that, your junior year, and then you will be, scrambling to get stuff finished. Also, if you're in an umbrella school, the umbrella school may have some requirements. An umbrella school, just quickly, I meant to touch on that earlier. I don't think I did. An umbrella school is basically, now I remember. It is basically like a private school. So your umbrella school may have specific requirements like attendance. All right, and I told you I was going to talk about ways to alleviate parental stress. One of the true confessions here is I stressed every year. I would spend hours and hours reviewing with my children. Now, this is as a young, early homeschool mom, and I made us all nervous wrecks until I realized some very basic facts and ways to overcome the end of the year cramming for test taking that I'm going to share with you in just a minute. I want to assure you, in testing, there is definitely a do-over. You don't have to turn in that standardized test result. You do not have to turn in that evaluation. Make sure it comes to you first. Take a look at it. Get someone else if you're not happy with the results. And, you know, if you are, I know that they have put some homeschoolers on probation if they really have not done well. It may flag whether your child has a learning difficulty or not if they did not do well. And you may want to have that evaluated, and then you can submit that information. Not test scores, not IQ, nothing. As you can hear in this podcast, I love to follow the law, but I love to give them the least amount of information that I can. We don't need people to be too intrusive in our lives. Secondly, if you're relaxed, your kids are going to be relaxed, and that's the best way to get through this. And with prayer, very important. And just let your kids know, don't worry, you know, if it doesn't go well, we can do it again. And third, kids have their ups and downs, and unless you prepare them for what to expect, it can be a disaster. But if you freak them out, it can be even worse. My niece, who is now a doctor, really had a bad experience in second grade with the standardized tests. And so that kind of set her up for hating the test-taking thing. I don't know the entire situation as to why it was such a bad experience. All I know is the end result that it was. And so you don't want a child going into something and doubting, like, she always wanted to be a doctor, and I'm so happy and proud that she is. But you don't want a child going into something like that and not being prepared. Again, you know, if they're going to be standardized tested, have them sit for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever the testing procedure is. Find out what that is. Let them practice bubbling things in. When my kids took the standardized test, they thought it was a party. It was great. They were there with their friends. They got to have a snack in between during break. They got to, you know, hang out and have lunch afterwards. It was this big, great thing. You know, just get them prepared. So what's a safeguard to ensure that your kids are on track to make progress? And one of the ways is a program I've created. It is sold on MediaAngels.com, and it's the beginning, middle, and end of year checklist. It comes with a set of checklists, but it also comes with audios that explain the process of making sure that you're on track for the year. My husband actually came out with this idea after seeing me freak out at the end of the year. And he said, you know, if you evaluated at the beginning of the year what your goals are and set up what you wanted to accomplish for the year, had another check right after Christmas time, and the third check at the end of the year, you would be able to fine tune what you do. And that worked out really well. So I've created this checklist. I also have an audio that I have done. And I'll put that podcast link on the show notes on vintagehomeschoolmoms.com, podcast 190 under evaluations. You know, good information to know. And I'm going to just read you the mid-year checklist here, just a few things. Here are some questions to consider when you're checking, let's say in January, for your school year. You know, how is it going overall? Did I meet my goals? What didn't work, and what won't I use again? What worked well that I want to continue? For example, if it's a good math curriculum that you're using. Elements to consider: a family mission statement, family goals, character, family and individual members, spiritual goals, homeschool philosophy, education, class topics. You know, what is going well? What curriculum did you select? Is that still going well? What are the main books you're using? What are some other books that you're using or you want to include? Do you have a yearly schedule? Look at that. Are you staying on track? If you said in January you're going to be studying astronomy and you're still in oceanography, which was, you know, started in September, you may want to look at that and wrap up that unit study or those books and move on so that you're going to stay on track. Do you have a monthly schedule? Are you looking at how many math pages they're going to finish? My grandkids told me yesterday Emma's going to be done with her book today, and Sam's going to be done on Monday. And it is April as we're recording this, and the year doesn't end until May here in Florida. So they're ahead of schedule, but I can guarantee you my daughter took that book, divided it by the number of weeks that there were, and figured out how many pages they needed to do a day in order to stay on check. And then, of course, the kids worked ahead, very likely, which is how they got ahead. Look at your weekly schedule. Are you managing to get everything done during that week? And if you're not, consider doing a four-day week where you have a catch-up day. You may be a little bit longer on those 4 days, but that gives you a day for field trips. So if it's not on a Friday, for example, and the field trip's on Wednesday, it's easy to move your schedule around. Look at your daily schedule. Again, do you have too many things you're trying to accomplish, not enough? Are the kids getting into trouble, mischief? And if they are, that means that they're not sticking to their schedules, or it's too easy, or it's too hard. Look at your extra activities, your everyday routines, daily chores. If you have a catch-up day, are you going to be doing field trips, mini vacations? Do you have any other breaks that you want to put in there? So that just gives you an idea of what the mid-year check-off list is going to look like, and what I am suggesting that you do, so that when you get to evaluation time, you're not going to be stressed out because the kids are on track. Also, what about a review process that's fun and effective? And it basically is number one, this is all of it, and that is play games. We used to keep the 1 day a week open so we could have a catch-up day, and I also used it to review our skills, and games are the best way to do it. I know people like worksheets, and I truthfully like worksheets, but the best way your kids are going to learn is by demonstrating it through a game or by teaching someone else. If your child is struggling and you want them to show mastery of what they have learned, have them tell it to you. Have them, you know, teach a younger sibling. They will be so great at doing what you have wanted them to do just because they're teaching someone else. And again, the games are great. We had all kinds of educational games. I still have a closet full of educational games that I'm hoping to pass on to my daughter when her kids are a little bit older. I've got some older games in there. They already obviously have all our younger ones. Be relaxed. If your child sees that you're not doing well, you know, about this whole situation, or if your child's not doing well in a particular subject, either kick back, use a different approach, or a different curriculum. You know, it really does help sometimes to just stop. You know, one of our sponsors is usedhomeschoolbooks.com. Go check out what Lori has. She was a homeschool mom, and she may have something else that you want to check out instead of what you're doing. Believe me, candy for counting or coins went a long way in teaching math. Cooking was awesome for fractions, so some of the things you can do. Again, look at the curriculum you're using. Are there assessment tests that you can possibly give your kids to see how they're doing before in the end of the year? You may want to look at that. You may want to pull them out and make some copies of them so you can give it to them more than one time. Again, not just so that you're copying the book. You don't want to do that. But if you wanted to let them take the same test over again, you can. And then they can do the final one in the book if it's a write-in book. You know, standardized tests use logic. They don't test what a child knows. So keep that in mind. And remember to pray. Ask the Lord if you're reaching your goals for your child. Sometimes while we focus on academics, the real underlying issues are being ignored. I stopped a school day sometimes, the entire day, due to misbehavior. And I remember sitting with my kids, and even in high school, they were going, you know, we have to get done, you know, da-da-da, we have sports, we have this to do and that to do. And I just said to them, the most important thing for me is not how well you're doing in class, but how well you love the Lord and serve them. And, you know, your attitude or whatever the issue was. So, you know, even in high school, you might need to stop the day to see if you need to revamp things. But whatever you do, I'm sure it will be great. And I'm just here to encourage you not to worry, not to stress, and, you know, pray, make sure that you're on track and go from there. Take care, everybody. God bless. This was an episode of Vintage Homeschool Moms. Check out the show notes again at podcast 190 on vintagehomeschoolmoms.com. Thanks so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at mediaangels.com and thevintagehomeschoolmoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.